This is a Christian Science Extemporaneous Prayer Treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. Website mbeinstitute.org. One mind, steady progress. Chapter 14 of the Christian Science textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy, is a summary of chapters 1 through 13. The title of 14 is Recapitulation. The introductory quote to that chapter is from Isaiah, and it says, precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line, here a little, there a little. And the introductory quotes to the entire textbook are as follows. 1. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Jesus. 2. There is nothing, either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. 3. Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere. This is an extremely important message that is being broadcast to us, because 14, being a summary, and it's very concise, there's only 24 questions with answers, which is the format for the entire chapter. And for that quote to be placed where it is within the textbook, I believe is telling us that that is the entire key to progress. Precept upon precept. Just a little at a time. Line upon line. That's the detail. So the first part, precept upon precept, I believe that refers to the macro. And the line, I believe, refers to the micro. And then it's really telling us the bottom line. A little bit here, a little bit there. So simple. One very effective way to stay focused so that one can make on a consistent basis progress every time they study, and that is to learn all about what Mary Baker Eddy refers to on page 146 and 330. Here's what she says. Divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based, and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease. That was 146. And on page 330, 32 planks of the platform. When the 32 planks of the platform is understood, and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated. That was from page 330, and from page 330 to 340 are the 32 topics to which is referred in this introductory paragraph. So even though she devotes 600 pages of the textbook, and of course there's another 101 pages at the end, so it's really 599 of the textbook and 101 at the end, which is fruitage, she is condensing it down to the essence which comes from 32 topics tucked into only 11 pages. If we consider the three introductory quotes to the textbook, the introduction to chapter 14, and these statements on page 146 and 330, we have before us the meat, the essence of where we need to be focusing. The basis of the system are the seven synonymous terms for God, the four operators, and the four levels of consciousness. The definition of God, which is stated as the very first topic in those 24 questions and answers of recapitulation, includes the seven synonymous terms and four very important adjectives, which are symbols of the four operators. The definition is as follows. What is God? God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. The first four words that were indicated as adjectives are really symbols of the operators. The first one, incorporeal, is telling us the most important thing about the first operator, which is titled God. God is incorporeal. We're wasting our time if we talk to God as if God is a person, as many people do, thinking that Jesus is a person, and they request something from their concept of God. But what does Genesis say, chapter 1, at the end about God? It said, and God finished his work, and everything was good. Are we going to try to change what God has already done by giving him instructions, asking for something and expecting him to deliver? Or are we going to do like Mary Baker Eddy in that third quote at the beginning where she says, oh, thou hast heard my prayer and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere. But what do you think her prayer is? The Bible says we should pray without ceasing. I believe that means that the prayer is a prayer of living with every thought, speech, and action the qualities of God as expressed in the seven synonymous terms of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Mind is anything to do with the mental. Spirit is anything to do with substance. Soul is identification. What faculties do we use for identifying? How about seeing, hearing, feeling, smelling, and taste? And the more senses we use, the more sure we will be that we are going to identify properly. So the first adjective of incorporeal is telling us that God is mental, incorporeal, not a body. And because it is mental, it is omnipresent. What did Jesus do whenever he saw someone that appeared to have a problem? He translated. He translated from whatever it was that the appearance was trying to suggest to what Genesis chapter 1, 26 and 27 says. That is, that man is made in the image and likeness of God. Not a body, because God is not a body, and not something imperfect, because Jesus translated whatever appeared as something imperfect to seeing the real perfect idea of God. And the third word is supreme. Supreme means greater than everything else. And as we learn more about God, we'll not only learn that God is greater than everything else, but God is the only thing that exists. Because He is the only source, and everything that exists is His manifestation. His is a generic term. It really means man, woman, and child. It has nothing to do with gender. It is all genders. How can we be reflecting the supreme, the perfection, the apex? By understanding the first and second operators. Knowing that God is incorporeal, and knowing that we need to translate whatever comes our way that is less than 100% godlike into the truth, which is that everything is godlike. We're just looking at the wrong image, and we're looking at an imperfect product, which means that we're not looking through the lens of the only spirit, the only substance, which is flawless. We just have to change from a material viewpoint to the true spiritual viewpoint. This is one reason why it is so important to separate a personality from anything that is unlike God. That's exactly what Jesus did when He was translating. And He was able to demonstrate the healing because He was doing that. He was realizing that God is the only source, and that God is perfect, and therefore, if He was seeing something imperfect, He had to translate it by converting His thought from any material aspect to purely the spirit, which is the only real substance of whatever He was viewing. And if He got those two together, connecting the dots, then He would be able to automatically translate what He was seeing and demonstrate what was the truth about the real man as described in Genesis chapter 1, verses 26 and 27, where the real man is the image of the one and only perfect source, which is God. And therefore, God cannot be, since He is perfect, cannot be sick, sinful, diseased, or dead. There can't be anything imperfect about God. And therefore, what could be imperfect about God's image? Nothing. Nothing. And the more we accept that as the truth of being, so that our conviction is firm and assured and confident, then we will be like it says in the Bible about we can move mountains if we can conceive of it. And that's really, I believe, giving us the message that we can see perfection if we understand the truth about reality. So that brings us to the fourth term, which is a symbol for the fourth operator. And that is telling us that there is absolutely no limit to God. And that is called the science. The science recognizes infinity. Mary Baker Eddy makes the statement that infinite progression is concrete being. In other words, our substantial future is based on never stop growing, because we are constantly striving for a broader and broader understanding of infinity. And that infinity is God being expressed in His infinite, all-encompassing, all existence. There's nothing outside of the existence of God. There's nothing outside of God's source, because His source includes His manifestation. On page 587, Mary Baker Eddy gives a second definition of God, and that's the glossary, which is the key to the scriptures portion of the textbook. Chapter 15 is the beginning, which is Genesis. Chapter 16 is the apocalypse, and chapter 17 is the glossary. And the glossary defines God as the great I Am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, and eternal. Principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all-substance, intelligence. The same seven synonymous terms are presented in a little different order, and the emphasis, instead of being on incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite, are on the great I Am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, eternal. And then at the end, all-substance, intelligence. Every single word in the English language can be ascribed to one of the terms that is used in the system of divine metaphysics. And if it is an evil term, then all we have to do is realize that that is a material aspect which is incorrect, and we flip it. We merely flip it. And the opposite is the truth. The evil is the lie. Mary Baker Eddy describes life from a material aspect as being a compounding of lie upon lie. In fact, she uses it in the plural. Lies compounded upon lies. And she also says the lie and the liar are the same thing, which means that there cannot be a lie unless someone is conceiving something that is evil. So what we need to do is make sure that we are sticking with a perspective that is looking through the lens of spirit, which is flawless, instead of letting a sense of material seeing, hearing, feeling, smelling, or taste be accepted in our consciousness as being real. And it is far easier to keep anything from getting into our consciousness that is unlike God than it is to letting it in and try to get rid of it. It's like when you see a picture. If it's really something that is making an impression on you, good or bad, it is almost impossible to get rid of that image. Jesus said that if we think about something, it's the same as doing it. One of the best ways not to think about a material aspect is to keep our thought on a perfect model that we have cultivated, so that we can immediately transfer our focus from whatever is trying to make a presentation to us that is unlike God, and immediately think about what God is, what man is. We have several pages in a new presentation that we just posted on the website today about man. And they are three quotes from the textbook. One is from chapter 14, the recapitulation chapter, and the question is, what is man? And one is from chapter 17, the glossary, and in between those is from chapter 15, which is the first chapter of the Key to the Scriptures entitled Genesis, and that refers to a detailed explanation from a spiritual view of what we were discussing, where it said in Genesis 1, verse 26 and 27, about who man is. I will recite only the third one, which is from page 591, because it is short, and the other two compose a combination of about three or four pages. So, if we want to think of just the summary, the essence of what man is, which is you and me and everyone, because there's only one father, there's only one father because there's only one mother, and one God because God is both father and mother. In other words, all of the qualities that we might think of as being most likely to be expressed by the female gender, and all the qualities that are most likely to be exercised by the male gender, Mary Baker Eddy combines into one. And all you have to do is look at her spiritual sense of the Lord's Prayer, where Jesus says, "Our Father which art in heaven." And she says that really means our Father, Mother, God. Father, Mother, God. Mother relates to love, and one of the overpowering characteristics of love is nurturing. So love means that we are nurturing all of the qualities of God. In other words, the qualities of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love itself. That's a little taste of the seven synonymous terms and also the four operators. So what about the four levels of consciousness? They're on page 115 and 116. And they're very simply the top one, which is what we were discussing in the definition of God, which describes it as incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite. And, of course, what that refers to is God. God is the owner, and we have the ability to reflect them, but God doesn't give them to anyone. That is what God is. And as we reflect them, that's what we are, because we're reflecting what God is. In other words, we don't have any limit on the ability to reflect the intelligence of God, because intelligence is the mental, and the same with the knowing, the wisdom. Those are all mental qualities. Faculties are all mental. Our seeing, hearing, feeling, smelling, and taste, those are all mental. Facility, faculty, functionality, performance, power, all mental. Creative ability, all mental. She gives us about 50 terms on average to describe each one of the seven synonymous terms for God. And she gives us exactly 350. That's not 50 for each one, it's just an average of 50 for each one of the seven synonymous terms, but a total of 350. So basically, all of the vocabulary in the English language can be condensed down to the seven synonymous terms, the four operators, and the four levels of consciousness. So that's 8 and 7, you know, 7, 4, and 4. So that's 15. So 15 terms are basically covering the entire American English language. No one can really get the full perspective of what anything Mary Baker Eddy states unless they have a master of the English language. Because every language is different. And this was revealed to her in English. She wrote the textbook in English, and all of her writings are in English. And only if you do a serious study of the English language can you get the true perspective of what the message is in her writings. And it's true of any author. If an author is from Italy and writes in Italian, you're not going to be able to understand him as clearly if it is translated into another language from Italian. Same with any language. It was very common to learn multiple languages in years past. When I was in school, I had an option to take languages, and I asked my dad what language he would recommend. And he said Latin, because Latin is the foundation of the European languages. They're called the Romance languages, and those are really the foundation for a lot of words that we use in English, even though there is no such thing as English in the Romance languages. England is not considered part of Europe. It's a separate continent and a separate country. And the other ones do not include English. So that's what the suggestion was. And so I took 2 years of Latin. And if you want to look up the derivation of a number of words, you will find that a good dictionary will give you the Latin derivation. And that is a great help in understanding what the real word is. Most people don't understand what hearing is. Hearing means understanding. And if we're going to be in the spiritual realm, it means spiritual understanding. Whereas seeing means spiritual perception. Perception means being able to tell the difference between one thing and another. And the most important thing is to be able to tell the difference between the spiritual and the material theory. It's the spiritual fact versus the so-called material theory. John, the beloved disciple of Jesus, asked Jesus, "Is there a material man?" Jesus gave him the answer. And then after receiving that answer, he thought he would broaden his question a little bit. And he said, "Is there a material world?" That's not in the Bible. The question and answer is not in the Bible, as are many things missing from the Bible. But we have the complete conversation between John and Jesus about that topic, and it's on the website. And instead of just giving you a short answer or a summary, I highly recommend that you read the conversation. And it's in the index, in the menu. And by the way, if you ever have anything about a single thing or many things on the website or in any of Mary Baker Eddy's writings, of course they are all on the website, or about any prayer treatment, we have about 500 prayer treatments. Any question at all. This will be published as a treatment on the website. But anything at all that you have a question about, you are welcome to contact us, and we will direct you to where the answer is and also guide you on the perspective that you need to have in order to get the true spiritual meaning of the answer to any question you have. So now, getting back to the four levels of consciousness, as mentioned, we know what the highest level is, because that's the one and only source of reality, and that's God. And a part of that highest source is the word idea. Because what is God unless God has ideas? Because everything in all existence is a reflection of God. That means it's an idea of God. And Mary Baker Eddy tells us, and so does the Bible, in Genesis 1, that God's highest idea is you and me. Man. Everyone. All humanity. That's God's highest idea. But only can we experience that when we are reflecting the spiritual qualities, which is God manifesting himself, and not if we're acting in theory of materialism. Because that's not God. That's not an expression of God. Let me give you the definition of man on page 591, which is what I indicated before, but we got off on another topic. And this is in the glossary. Man, the compound idea of infinite spirit, the spiritual image and likeness of God, the full expression of what? What's the most unlimited concept for God? Mind. So we're the full expression of mind. And the Bible indicates that God gave man dominion over all the earth. Wow. I mean, that's everything. What's in the sky, what's in the water, what's on the surface, everything. He gave dominion to man. Now what man? The man that is described at the highest level. The man that is the reflection of God himself. The man that is the idea of God. The man that is acting like Jesus acted. Automatically translated anything that was in a material perspective, which is theory, to fact, which is spiritual. That's the only way we can be reflecting God. If we are in the spiritual perspective in every thought, speech, and action. We all have a pretty good sized closet of things that we wish that we hadn't done. And if we include the fact that Jesus says thinking about something is the same as doing it, boy, that expands that closet to a huge closet. Because all of us have thoughts. And if we reject them, if they're ungodlike thoughts, then that's wonderful. What's an example of something we think about, but we don't physically think we're doing, but in fact we are? Any thought about anything or anyone that is less than absolutely perfect. If we look in the mirror, if we're a man, and we're looking in there to shave. Some people do it by feel, like me when I'm in the shower, because the water softens the skin and it makes it for an easier smooth surface when you're finished shaving. But a lot of people look in the mirror when they're shaving. And they combine the feel to see if they have anything rough that needs to be shaven off. If we see a single thing as a defect, who knows? Maybe we hit our head on something. And we have a scratch on our forehead or something that's maybe been there for 5 minutes or 5 hours or whatever. If we see anything at all that we are translating as being imperfect, that's a sin. Because it's a sin to see anything that is imperfect. And as we study more and more about God, where we are wanting to focus more and more on perfection, then we will become more and more sensitive to anything that is in conflict with the consciousness that we are nurturing, which is perfection. Wentworth Winslow is one of three expert Christian Scientist practitioners of the past era. And he said, imagine you're in a room. And this was about 100 years ago when he said this. So there's not the technology that we have today. But he said, imagine you're in a room and there's a radio and a telephone. And the telephone is ringing its head off. And it's a symbol of mortal mind. Mortal mind suggestions. Trying to get your attention. To let it get its foot in your door. And the other device is a radio that is tuned in to station KOG, Kingdom of God. And it's doing one thing and one thing only. Announcing the qualities of God. All the good things about God are being announced from that radio. That's all it is a one-way communication. So forget about trying to talk to God. It's one way. God is. In other words, we either accept it or we reject it, but we can't change it. God's work is done. In fact, Mary Baker Eddy says the first three words in Genesis chapter 1, where it says, in the beginning, she says that's not really what it means. She said it means in the only. Because truth doesn't change. The Bible tells us. The truth doesn't change. The truth always is. There's nothing new under the sun, the Bible states. And in fact, the beautiful thing from Habakkuk, a real small book of the Bible, near the end of the Old Testament, and it says that God is of purer eyes than to behold evil. So there is nothing about God which is unlike perfection. Nothing. And of course, Genesis 1 tells us everything that God made is very good. And I'll read the definition of good or recite it to you right now, which is in the glossary. Good is defined as God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, which includes all intelligence, wisdom, and knowing, all presence, omnipresence, and omniaction. That's what the definition of good is. So when Genesis tells us that everything that God made is very good, that's the definition of good. In fact, a Pharisee asked Jesus one time and addressed him this way. He said, dear Master, how can I obtain eternal life? It happened to be a Pharisee that was loaded with money, or whatever they counted as assets. Maybe it was cattle. Who knows? But he said, how can I obtain eternal life? Because not only did he want all the possessions he had, but he wanted to have them forever. He was living, apparently, like a fat cat. just really pleased with everything. And Jesus said, "Why call me thou good?" Because, you know, the Pharisee says, "Good master." He says, "Why call thou me good?" He said, "There's only one good, and that is, you guessed it, God." Just as Mary Baker Eddy defines it in the glossary. Everything that is in the textbook, Mary Baker Eddy derived the concepts from the Bible. The Bible was her only guide. And of course, the words that she heard because of her understanding, and that's why she calls herself a scribe and not an author. In fact, the final edition in 1910 of Science and Health, she did not copyright it purposely because she said the subject is so vast that she wanted people to feel free to write about it if they did it honestly and if they had an understanding about what they were writing about. She wanted them to feel free to do it, use what they wanted to out of the Science and Health. And of course, it's only honest if you give credit to where you receive your idea. Otherwise, it's dishonesty. Plagiarizing is dishonesty. Plagiarizing means you are taking an idea from someone else and you're not giving credit to your source. She gives credit to God for everything she wrote. She said she waited as long as 6 months to get one word that she was looking for as a key thought for, you know, something she was writing. But she considers herself a scribe. Other people that have quoted Mary Baker Eddy, such as Richard Oakes and the Carpenter team of father and son, they wrote things which were quotes from Mary Baker Eddy. In fact, entire books that were nothing but unpublished quotes. And they have the word compiler used instead of author. So they were a compiler of thoughts that were unpublished from Mary Baker Eddy. And we've got hundreds and hundreds, probably several thousand pages of books that are compilations. But that's what Mary Baker Eddy encouraged. She wanted to leave the door open. In fact, the system that I am describing to you, Mary Baker Eddy hid the system in the textbook. She didn't tell you the kind of things I'm telling you. She didn't connect the dots. And she feels that if she had laid out the complete system, that the book would have been destroyed. And that's the same thing with the Bible. A lot of things in the Bible are not clear, and that's the reason it was able to last through time. If everything was clearly stated in the Bible, as Mary Baker Eddy has stated it, they wouldn't have let the Bible continue. But it was so confusing. And why was it confusing? All of these noted scholars of the Bible, they don't know the first thing about the Bible. And why not? Because they're looking at it from a material perspective instead of a spiritual. The Scofield Bible is a fraud. That was written particularly to guide one's thought away from the truth in the Bible. I was shocked when I first learned that. I used to think that the Scofield Bible was a reference that people ought to have available to use. But if you really look at it from a spiritual perspective, you'll see that there is a bias in it which we should not touch with a 10-foot pole. I spent quite a deal of money, at least a couple, maybe $3,000, on Bible studies, courses, and software. One piece of software alone was $800. But the problem is, I was naive, such that I was looking outside of the Christian Science writings, thinking that that was going to give me what I needed to understand the Christian Science writings. And that was wrong. That was a mistake. That was a mistake. If we study according to the system that we have outlined, in fact, right now it's on our home page. It's called Effective Healing. We give you step-by-step instructions on what is our highest sense of how to learn the most, the quickest, telling you exactly what steps to take, what devices, what system, and we lay it all out for you. And if you follow our recommendation, you will be using all five senses. All five. We haven't seen anyone else recommend it. But we know it works. Because there's 101 pages in the back of the textbook that tells you an inferior way to learn. They didn't have recording devices. They didn't have cameras. They didn't have scanners. They didn't have playback devices. They didn't have any of the tools that we have available now, except they had paper and writing instruments. If they wanted 10 copies of something, somebody had to write out 10 copies. Imagine. And yet, look what Mary Baker Eddy accomplished without any of the technology we have today. And she didn't even use a phone, even though the phone was available. She was here in visible form until December 1910, and the phone was available. But she did not want it because of exactly the same reason that was stated by Wentworth Winslow several years later. And that was that it was a tool for infiltrating into our life and experience things that were less than godlike. Totally less. So she did not use a telephone. If anybody wanted to get a message to her, they would have to make an appointment and travel to where her home was at the time. Nope. She didn't use the telephone. She didn't use the mail. Because everybody was attacking her, trying to sabotage Christian Science, trying to sabotage her work. So she had to have everything hand-delivered. And she was quite a travel between where she was in Boston, which is where the headquarters were. She was in New Hampshire. Concord, New Hampshire. How about that for a name? Wouldn't that be a beautiful name to have for the area where you live is Concord? Wow. In fact, she gave us 7 prayers called Diapason of Heaven, and Diapason means compound concord. Instead of compound lies, which is the material aspect of the material view of a so-called material man, it's the opposite. It's compounded concord. It's compounded divine principle. Divine principle represents balance and harmony. Think of love as a lubricant. No matter what kind of friction is going on, if you apply love to it, it gets rid of all the conflict. If any of you have ever heard of a man by the name of Bruce Lee, he was the greatest martial artist of all time. I mean, he was so many dimensions above everyone else that no one could touch him if he was in a conflict with him. Nobody could lay a finger on him. Joe Louis was one of the greatest boxers of all time. And Joe Louis went to watch Bruce Lee train one time. And after watching him, he made the comment. He didn't tell this directly, he told this to other people, because he didn't want to interfere with Bruce Lee's training, because he went to, this was in a hotel, and they both happened to be in the same hotel at the same time. And Joe Louis went there to exercise. But Bruce Lee was there, and so he was intrigued by what Bruce Lee, how Bruce Lee was training. And after watching him, he told acquaintances that he knew after he left the room. He said, Bruce Lee doesn't fight. He disappears. So when someone throws a punch, he's not there. He is moved. And of course, as you know, somebody that's really fast can move their fingers or their hand or their arm faster than what one can see, unless they have it on a camera and they show it in slow motion, like a video in slow motion. Because you can move an object faster than the eye can see it. So you have to have a camera with a high-speed facility and then slow it down in order to really see the movement. Well, Bruce was faster than what the movement could be. And how did he do it? He analyzed, he was an expert on the human body. And he knew what had to take place in order for a punch to be thrown. What moves? Is it the feet first, or the waist, the shoulders? What is it that moves first? And he figured this all out scientifically. And so he knew exactly what they were going to do and where the punch was going to go before it ever left the first part of the punch. He knew it. He knew where it was. He knew what they were going to do and where it was going to be directed to. And so he had to move before there was any movement by the opponent. Because there wasn't time if you waited. And that's why everybody that fought him, all these big muscle men and so forth, one of them was like 500 pounds. And he was just, it showed a picture of him and just muscle everywhere. And he said, well, I'll just grab him and choke him to death. You see, the body transmits what it's going to do if you have studied the physics of the body. And Bruce was an expert. He was the only expert. And these top boxers, and I don't even like to watch fights, but these top boxers would go to him for training because he was teaching them something that no one else knew. And they would fight him, and they would lose. And while they were in the fight, he would explain to them what they were doing wrong. They would take a punch at him and be totally hitting air, A-I-R. And so he would, after they miss, and some of them would fall down from just the force that they were putting behind it, and they couldn't even stay standing, and their own weight was taking him down. And he would explain what they were doing wrong when they missed him. He would end up being friends with everybody that he was in a fight with, because it was not a fight. It was a disappearance act, like a magician. A magician gets your attention in one place, and he is doing the action in another place. And this is what Bruce Lee was doing in a martial arts fight. He was so far ahead of everyone else. And he was unfortunately murdered because he would not yield to the corruption in the martial arts industry, where the money people wanted to control all the fighters. Unfortunately, he was so intelligent in everything he did, he wasn't open to the truth about everything was being controlled. And he wouldn't be bought. He would not be bought. He told the guy that controlled all of the fighting that took place in Hong Kong, and Bruce was born in America. And he was in Hong Kong, and he was invited to see the guy that was the number one guy that controlled all the fighting. And he would not bow down to him. He would not follow the plan of the people that were controlling everything. So they murdered him. He was only 32 years old. What a shame. He was such a master at 32. All the famous actors that we know about, you know, like Steve McQueen and all the tough guys, you know, John Wayne, all the tough guys. Yeah, nobody could touch him. He became friends with them because they couldn't understand him and they wanted to understand. So he was willing to train them. Well, these four levels of consciousness. We've only talked about the highest level, and the lowest level is called what? You can guess it. What is the word that describes the lowest, most evil thing in thinking? Depravity. That's the lowest level. So there are three levels that are mortal mind derived, and one that is divine mind. And the mortal mind includes from the lowest, which is depravity, up to the next one, which is moral, up to the third one, which is spiritual. But again, these are relative terms. They're not absolute. Only the top one that describes God and God's idea and God's reflection of man, those are absolute. They're not relative. And all of the other ones come from mortal mind. They are all relative. So spiritual is relating the concept of a material man that has improved his thinking in steps, coming from depravity and then coming up to the moral. Moral, you know, means knows the difference between right and wrong. And then the spiritual, where they're really striving to be God's man, to be the image and likeness as described in Genesis chapter 1. It's all a step-by-step process, as Isaiah tells us, precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little, there a little. Everything about life gives us an opportunity to take a little step forward. And we must understand how the brain operates. It defends itself. It operates on self-ego and self-will, and we're not even aware of it. We just think it's natural to do what we do, when in fact that we are a slave to a material brain until we awaken. And it takes a lot of awakening, but we can do it step by step. This is 2026. It's June 18th on a Thursday. June 18th, very close to July 4th, which is the 250th anniversary. 250th anniversary. Of America. Things are happening so fast because they have been dripped to re-educate the human brain, because the human brain would reject everything that is taking place right now and has been on an increasing accelerated path since 2017, when it was the president's first term. And by the way, the president has been the president ever since 2017. Even when he wasn't publicly the named president, he was the president. He was the commander in chief. And the other one was a fake. Wasn't even alive. The cannon exercise they had at the inauguration was a death celebration for the military. Three cannons. It wasn't the normal inauguration ceremony at all. Anyway, drip, drip, drip is the only way that we can convert the brain from operating on a material basis to a higher level. And we have to take it a step at a time. Mary Baker Eddy says she has never known anyone to elevate out of the worst depravity into higher levels without going through a little bit at a time. Debbie Klingbeil, she's on her website. She came from a family, very unusual family. And she was the last survivor, daughter of the one that really broke the ice on the research of prayer. And it's called the Seed Project, because what they did is they took agricultural seeds and they prayed about them for them to be growing and coming to fruit. The Seed Project. We have it all on our website. And she discovered that the human brain has a built-in defense system. This was never discussed by Mary Baker Eddy. This is one of those avenues where Mary Baker Eddy said, it's such a vast subject, I want to leave it open for further development. In fact, a very dear friend of the Institute, Mary Baker Eddy Institute, is a fellow by the name of Rolf Witzke. And Rolf recently left us, went around the corner where he's not visible, but he understood more about this system than anyone else has ever understood. I mean, in a different dimension. He was an IBM mainframe programmer and maintenance expert, maintaining these huge, massive computers back when it took a room full of steel and everything to do a calculation that was add, subtract, multiply, and divide. That's an exaggeration, but I mean basically you had to be a real expert on everything, electricity and physics and mechanical engineering. Anyway, he was one of those. And it took that kind of a thought process to be able to develop what he understood about what Mary Baker Eddy left us in the textbook Under the System of Divine Metaphysics. His work is just amazing. We have it all on our website. And he was a personal friend of mine. I had many conversations with him over many years. And that was a real privilege. But he was the most advanced, without question. So you can see everything that he did in connecting the dots and putting together a lot of things that Mary Baker Eddy left hidden that had to be dug out and analyzed. And he was a wonderful guy to do it because of his background in the things that I described about his profession. We are very fortunate to not be the first one going through the jungle, as was Jesus, Moses, Abraham, the prodigal son, King David. Solomon was a real champion, much more than King David. And that's why he became the wealthiest man in the world. That's why the man that's the wealthiest one in the world to recognize right now is the wealthiest. Now, I don't know how his wealth compares to Solomon, but up until he came along, he was still recognized as the one that had the greatest wealth of anybody. Even Andrew Carnegie, who had a big steel industry during the Industrial Revolution, and he sold it for $350 million 125 years ago, approximately. Today, it would be several, I don't know how many billions, I never looked it up, but he was considered one of, if not the wealthiest man at that time, although the Rothschilds, which are controlling the banking system around the world, is maybe was dimensions above him. But anyway, the point is that what he did was he spent his life building this business from nothing. He was an immigrant. I believe it was from Ireland. And I say that because after he sold his steel business and they renamed it U.S. Steel, I believe he had the name Carnegie Steel on it. He's the one that built Carnegie Hall. And he wanted to do something good with all the money he had, so he went around all of, you know, the eastern part of the U.S. and Ireland, and he built buildings and universities and libraries and as I mentioned, built Carnegie Hall. And the one thing he could have done better is if he could have kept his name off of it, but he had his name on everything. He did wonderful things, but that's one thing he could have done that would have been a little bit better. And that's what we want to do. And if you study the home page, or if it's not there, just go to the menu and look for the word effective healing. If you follow the procedure that we recommend on our effective healing presentation, don't be surprised if you don't start learning the very first time that you devote some time to do it. The very first day or the very first hour, whatever it is. Because we have such a revolutionary method that you may have a lot of resistance to doing it, and that's what we found. People have resistance doing it. And why? Because the brain rejects things that are new. And as stated earlier in this recording, you're welcome to call us if you have any question and don't understand something that you think is important to understand. We're here to serve you. We make it very clear what your attitude has to be. Frederick L. Rawson, one of the greatest geniuses in Christian Science, stated very clearly that our purpose on earth is to what? Guess what it is? But it applies to everybody that's been really successful as a healer. What do you think is the most important thing that you can do? Jesus was a prime example. Mary Baker Eddy, prime example. The three people that had 15-minute appointments where the healing was effected by the end of the 15 minutes. They all did it. The goal of the Mary Baker Eddy Institute is to do exactly that. The goal of the monitor, the Christian Science Monitor that Mary Baker Eddy founded, was to do exactly that. Do you remember the motto, or are you aware of the motto of the Christian Science Monitor? She started the monitor because she found that all of the news was biased, and it was to direct and educate the public in an evil way. I believe this intelligence agency of the U.S. is the biggest one in the world. They have a project called Project Mockingbird. It's on the internet. By the way, I recommend you don't use the one that starts with a G that everyone seems to be married to, because it is the most biased, corrupt one out there. We use Start Page, just like it sounds, S-T-A-R-T-P-A-G-E. But anyway, if you look it up, it will be there. And we have it on our website. We've had it on our website for many years. The director of that agency. It's a three-letter agency that starts with the letter C. You know, you probably already know what it is. But anyway, their goal in Project Mockingbird is as follows. They said when everyone in America believes what is false to be true, then we will have accomplished our goal. And look what the name is, Mockingbird. In other words, whatever someone says, the mockingbird mocks it. Well, so how can they have everyone believe something that is false to be true? By training the brain, by repeating the lie over and over and over and over, because they had total control of the media. Total control. So all they have to do is tell the media, and they would give them a script. They are giving them a script right now in lesser and lesser degree, and I think by July 4, it's going to be all over. It's going to be done. But anyway, all these years, they've been giving a script, and everybody says the same words. The same words. You don't even have to connect the dots. They do it for you because they have every basic major news channel saying the same thing over and over and over and over until we believe it to be true. The one that was the Speaker of the House said, here's one way you can do what you want to do. And this was to get people to believe what you want them to believe. She said, make up a lie, anything, about somebody that you want to get rid of. And then give it to the media. And then the media publishes it. And, you know, the practice of the media is not to disclose their source. So they publish it. And then the one that made up the lie, that was the Speaker of the House, she used the media as her authority to promote the lie, when in fact she's the originator of the lie. This is Project Mockingbird in action. Anyway, there have been a lot of drips of the truth over the last 9 years, since January 2017, and hopefully the public is awake enough that they're not going to be totally shocked out of their noggin as more and more is dropped of the truth between now and July the 4th. But a lot is taking place, and we have a tremendous amount on our website. Because, as Mary Baker Eddy said, you have to expose the evil, not the person, but the evil. Because, see, the person can always be replaced. So attacking the person does no good at all, because in today's technology, they just put out another clone or they hire another actor. Many of the people that we see today of politicians and judges and so forth, even the majority of the Supreme Court, they're not real people. They're not the original people. They have been replaced by actors or clones or CGIs. Yeah, you'll find out. Look up Central Casting. The president refers to Central Casting all the time. Just the other day he said, look at that Central Casting general. I mean, he tells us what he's doing. Do we even care enough about it to find out? Go on the internet. Look up Central Casting. It's an acting firm, a big one. If you want to fill a stadium of 100,000 people, they can provide 100,000 people to fill that stadium who will say and do whatever you tell them to do, because they are an actor. And they're paid to do it just like any other actor. They're paid to do what the script is. Yeah, that's true. I'm telling you the gospel truth, and we expose it on our website. We've been exposing it for years. We show you videos. In fact, we have videos on the website that show you how people get dressed to look up like, to look like someone else. Yeah. I mean, these are videos that anybody can go and research and download or watch online without downloading them. We have them on our website. We've been giving this stuff out for years. Years. Anyway, this is a very important awakening period. And if we stay asleep, we're in big trouble. We have people that contact us that just won't believe it. I've got somebody that I know of that's been in science. His mother was a Christian Scientist. And even though he's the only one in the family that stuck with it, he doesn't accept the truth. I tell him, I say, well, it's up to you. And I told you that we'll talk to people, but we have to make it a limit because there's only so many hours in a day and so forth. But we use them. Very common to get 3-4 hours or less a night, and we use the rest of them to do whatever we can to promote the truth that is on the website. All these wonderful authors, I mentioned these three of them. Well, no, I didn't give you the names, but, you know, Wentworth Winslow is one, and Frederick L. Rawson, and Joel Goldsmith. Frederick L. Rawson determined how to treat back in time. So that if you had a problem that came up 20 years ago, he could treat it and heal it, and it would disappear from your 20 years of pain and aggravation you had. Yeah. I mean, he's a genius. So, we have all of these tools. What tools did Mary Baker Eddy have? She had the Bible. She was the one going through the jungle, cutting the path. We should be so grateful. And yet, what did the church do? They did everything possible to get rid of her. The day she passed on, they took her picture out of the textbook. Can you imagine? There were statues all around the New England states, which is where she was, northeast part of the U.S. They took every statue down. The dear home that she lived in for 16 years, it's gone. They got rid of most of the homes that she lived in, and they were historical sites that weren't supposed to be touched. But paying the judges under the table, they were able to get everything done to try to make her disappear from her discovery. That's how evil works. Divide and conquer. That's how evil works. Control the people, control the narrative. Things that Mary Baker Eddy put in the journal special, they had people go around to the reading rooms and take them out. They think they can get rid of the truth. You cannot get rid of the truth. Sooner or later, it's going to raise its head and expose the evil. You cannot win with God if you're going to fight God. And what is God? God is the laws of the universe. God is not a man. God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite. Mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. God is the great I am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, eternal. Principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love. Remember man, the compound idea of infinite spirit, the spiritual image and likeness of God, the full expression of mind. Remember when it says in Genesis 1, we are made in the image and likeness of God. It says, let us make man in our image and likeness. Who is us? Mary Baker Eddy describes it. I think it's on page 515. In the key to the scriptures, us is truth, life, and love. Yeah, she puts it in the other order. She puts it in the order of life, truth, and love. Yeah, that's who us is. Remember, Jesus asked the man that was born blind, if he had faith, he could be healed. That's the first step. Do we have our thought open? Do we have the right attitude to even be thinking about the spiritual dimension? If we want to build up some confidence before we even begin, read that last chapter. The last chapter in the textbook. 85 individuals had testimonies in the Journal and the Sentinel that Mary Baker Eddy selected, and they each had an average of just under 6 healings apiece that they put in one testimony. So the 85 individuals gave 486 different things they were healed of in the 85 paragraphs from page 600 to 700, 101 pages. And we tell you how to improve on what they did because we have technology that makes it easier. If you've ever taken any advanced classes from the very top people considered in the world on the topic, they will tell you that, in fact, I'll tell you what my experience was. I walked into the room, and by the time he had the first break, which was, I don't know, a couple of hours or so, he had repeated some of the key points 3 times. And so I went up to him at the break. And, I mean, he had a reputation as being El Numero Uno. He was the top expert in this field. And so I asked him, I said, you know, I know your reputation. Why are you repeating something and giving it to us 3 times? He said, because I want you to remember it longer. He said, you're not going to remember it very long at all if I say it once. If I say it twice, you're going to remember it a little longer. If I say it 3 times, a little longer than that. But you're still going to forget it. I said, well, how can we remember it? I want to remember these things. These are really wonderful things that you're teaching us about or giving us an opportunity to learn from. He said, there's only one way. What do you think it was? What do you think he said? What was his trick? What did he discover that was the only way to remember something important? The only way. And it had to be something pretty complex because, I mean, if it was very simple, you know, like you remember you like whatever it is, chocolate ice cream. You know, it's pretty easy to remember. But if it's something that's complex, it's a different story. Do you have any idea what you can do to remember it? Absolutely a guarantee on how you're going to remember it. You have to do it. You have to live it. You have to live it. You have to practice it. Vladimir Ashkenazy, one of the greatest pianists of all time, he's from Russia, as are many of the very top people in music and other things, because they have a different culture there. They have a culture like a mother, where you're nurturing, and they nurture the people that have the greatest talent. They give them every opportunity to improve on it. They give them the best place to live, the best circumstances of life, the best status, and they really cultivate the people that have the greatest talent. And that's why they end up being the greatest in the whole world. A lot of great musicians, for example, and other areas. But anyway, what he was asked, he had a Q&A in one of his concerts. And he had a very well-known critic that was a critic of concert pianists in the audience. And he told him, he said, you know, I'm your worst enemy. He says, I travel all around trying to find when you make a mistake. He said, that's my profession. He said, "But I can't find you ever making any. None. Every time you perform, you perform with total perfection. And not only that, you talk to us while you're performing. You're not there like some statue, like most of these concert pianists, that you're so serious that, boy, you don't want to hear a pin drop in the crowd. You want total silence and everything, and here you're joking around with us while you're performing these very complex compositions." He says, "How do you do it?" Vladimir Ashkenazy said this. He said, "I practice," you know, he's a Russian, so he's got this roll of an accent, "practice, practice, practice until the music plays me." What does he do? What does he do to let the music play him? What does he have to do that hardly anyone is willing to do? He mastered it. He gets himself out of the way. He gets himself out of the way and lets the music play through his hands and fingers and arms and everything. His feet, you know, controlling the pedals and the whole works. He gets himself out of the way. Someone else that accomplished a tremendous amount was asked one time, "How do you accomplish so much?" And he said, "One day, I bent over." He said, "I'm nothing. I'm nothing." And he kept going lower and lower and lower until he bent to where his head was like on the ground, on the floor. And he said, I realized that I'm nothing. That everything I do is not from me. It's from God. The same as Vladimir Ashkenazy. He got himself out of the way. Are we willing to let ourselves be out of the way? Give up the sense of self-will, the biases that have been pounded into us from birth, about compounding of lie versus, you know, lie, compounding lie after lie after lie, being both the lie and the liar, about our true self, who we really are? Are we willing to take that step? Jesus did not take it in one step. Jesus had to master being a human. With all of the people attacking him and everything, he had to love as a human before he could get to the bridge of divinity. Mary Beck Reddy says that the magnitude of his humanity is what enabled his divinity. That's a paraphrase. The magnitude of his humanity enabled his divinity. He loved everyone so much that it didn't matter what they did to him, he saw them as a perfect image and likeness of God. The more they hated, the more he loved. There was a church one time that thought they were really advancing, and they sent a letter to Mary Baker Eddy. And they said, "Wow, we are so proud of what we've done here. We've accomplished so much. Everything is going so smoothly." She sent a letter back. What do you think she said? What do you think her response was? Was it congratulatory? Here's what she said. She said, "That's too bad. Because if you have no challenges, you cannot grow. And if everything is going smoothly, then you're not digging in to really climb that mountain." I've experienced difficult things, and I get to a point where I've had a success in something that had a lot of challenges. And as soon as I let my guard down, just, you know, in other words, just smiling and thinking, oh yeah, wow, everything is going great now. Wonderful, finally. That is when we are the weakest. And we are susceptible to being manipulated by a lax thought. We can't do it. We can't do it. If a sports team has a great win, they should do the opposite of celebrating. It's human nature to celebrate. When you've had a challenge and you've overcome it, you know, in this case, a challenge is an opposing team in a sports event. It's natural to celebrate. You know, they show, you know, in the videos of when you're, you know, when you're watching, if you watch a sport event where they're pouring champagne, or in a car race, they pour champagne over the head of the driver that won. That's the worst thing you can do. That's when you should turn the gears up and go to a higher gear. Celebrating is not the thing to do. We have a number of movies that we highly recommend on the website. One of them is called Remember the Goal. Highly recommend the movie. Highly recommend. And I don't want to tell you anything about it because I don't want to give an inkling of spoiling it. Just take my word for it. You will be very inspired by watching it. Not a single word of profanity in it or any kind of sexual innuendos or any of that kind of stuff. We never recommend that caliber of anything. I guess that's one reason I like Westerns so much. Anyway, it's a wonder. We have several great ones, and they're on the website. We have a master index in the header. The header is the same on every page. It's not like a lot of websites that the header changes when you go to a different category. Our header is the same. So no matter where you are, you can navigate to whatever's in the header. And we have in the header a master index. And if you click on it, you'll see a large number of things you can click on that takes you in one click to that category of something on the website. So you can find anything you want very quickly. And there's a section in the upper right-hand corner that says giving. And there's, I believe, well, I don't have it in front of me, but there will be one on movies, okay? Recommended movies that are regarding giving. And that's where it's listed. Remember the Goal. And there's several other ones there. One is called Pay It Forward. Anyway, check it out. And they will be, there's one of them that does have some profanity in the beginning, but the message is so good that we ask you to overlook that one. It's called Stand and Deliver. But it's a wonderful lesson in there. Very important ethics and everything that you can enjoy. Other than that, every single one is without any kind of profanity. And it's not that much, it's just in the beginning. So you have to overlook that one thing. Or if you don't want to even hear a few words in the beginning, then don't watch it. There's plenty of other things that are on there. We have a large inventory of videos that are about giving. Before you go to sleep, because this is getting pretty long, I see that it is an hour and 40 minutes. So it's 100 minutes. Wow. Okay. I'm going to close with something that if you have been in a Christian Science church at all, you've heard this one. And by the way, we have the definition of the real church in the header. And that's the church we are a member of here. And it's not a physical structure. It's not a bureaucracy. It's the definition of church that Mary Baker Eddy gave to the world. And that's the only kind of church that she really wanted. And she was convinced to have this physical church with bureaucracy because the people really needed it, because they were out there and they needed to have support from other people. But that should be the very introduction of our life to church. Music doesn't have a church. Mathematics, physics, homemaking, they don't have a church. How to raise family, how to teach children, they don't have a church. Jesus didn't have a church. Not a single church. Paul had several, but he spent most of the time they were in existence in prison. It's suggested that if you do need that in the beginning, just be aware that you don't want to get wrapped up into bureaucracy and where someone is trying to control the audience. And that's true in Christian Science churches as well as all the other ones. The board of directors of the mother church try to control all the branches, even though Mary Baker Eddy specifically stated that they were supposed to be operating independently and they were not supposed to be under the control of the Boston organization at all. And she has provisions in the manual that the Boston church was supposed to basically be disbanded except for just local operations as any other branch church after she passed on. So the temptation to control others and be greedy, that permeates human nature. And the only thing we can do is work against that and cultivate our divine nature. And that's what the motherhood is all about. Nurturing the qualities that we need to cultivate. What did Mary Baker Eddy do to police herself? To self-examine and keep herself on track? As mentioned, she was attacked by everyone. They took her picture out of the book. Here are quotes, just very quickly, in 1 or 2 minutes I can give you all of them. The one about church. These are all up in the header on every page. Church is the structure of truth and love. Rests upon divine principle. Proves its utility. Elevates the race from material to spiritual, casts out devils, heals the sick. That's the kind of church we want to be a member of. Under the picture of Jesus, up in the header, it says, utilize science to accomplish healings, but public not ready to receive it. He made the statement, I have more to say, but you're not ready for it. Mary Baker Eddy said the same statement. She said it'll be 50 years before you're ready for the system. She was right. Okay, under Mary Baker Eddy it says, discovered the science of the healings of Jesus and reduced to system for all to benefit. Under Einstein, blessed art thou, because everything that really is in this book. He was referring to Mary Baker Eddy as thou. That was even with a capital T. And the book is Science and Health, the textbook. And here's Clara Barton. She was the founder of the American Red Cross. And here's what she said. Mary Baker Eddy did the greatest good. Christian Scientist is the most potent factor in religious life. I mean, that's from the founder of the American Red Cross. She is worldwide respected as being one of the finest women that did the most good for humanity. And what does she do? She says Mary Baker Eddy is the one that did the most good. The most potent factor in religious life, and Mary Baker Eddy did the greatest good of anyone. That was stated in around 1900 or so. I'm going to close by reciting the scientific statement of being. because that is the one statement that has so few words, and yet it's like the Lord's Prayer. If you understand the spiritual nature of what is said there, it enables instantaneous healing. Here it is. And you can substitute words or supplement words, like where it talks about matter, you can add other things such as mortal mind or animal, mineral, vegetable, a broken arm, you know, whatever the ailment is. And where it talks about man, talk about I am the image and likeness of God, instead of just saying man is the image and likeness of God. If you look at the words carefully, you'll see that you can supplement or replace words to individualize it for your particular situation. And it has a very strong healing effect. Okay, here it is. There is no life, truth, intelligence, nor substance in matter. All is infinite mind, and its infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. Matter is mortal error. Spirit is the real and eternal. Matter is the unreal and temporal. Spirit is God, and man is his image and likeness. Therefore, man is not material. He is spiritual. Amen. It is 14:04. Those of you on the 12-hour clock, it's 2:04 in the afternoon. Thursday, January 18th, as previously noted. Thank you for listening. The end.